Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is sponsored in part by Prince Associates, Send in the Clowns, the Phoenix Tube Company, CelebrityTrips.com, the law firm of Decalator Cohen and DePrisco, Solomon Jewelers, and Relish Restaurant of Kings Park. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
Joining us now is a former 10th round draft pick of the Philadelphia Phillies in the 2009 Major League Draft. In 2010, he was named a South Atlantic midseason All-Star, won the Minor League Baseball Best Reliever in Class A for Full Season Award. He followed that up in the Arizona Fall League, being named an AFL Rising Star. He is a member of the Israeli national baseball team and was the winning pitcher after pitching three innings of no-hit ball while giving up a walk and recording three strikeouts during the third and final game of the qualifying tournament. He is currently a free agent, which is very interesting. We can talk to him a little bit about that. It is a pleasure to welcome Josh Zide to WLIE Sports Talk New York. Welcome, Josh.
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. And we're very thankful that we're able to speak to you because we were having some difficulties with the board. Josh, you are a product of the East Coast, born in New Haven, Connecticut. You led your high school team to two straight New England championships and a record of 54-15. You served as a team captain. In your senior year, you're a Gatorade Connecticut High School Player of the Year. You were ranked by Baseball America as the country's 27th best prospect. You were a Louisville Slugger National High School Baseball Coaches Association member, collegiate baseball, and Street and Smith's All-American. So that's an awful lot to accomplish as a high school student. At what point did you or your parents actually think that you might have a career as a Major League Baseball player?
Wow, just listening to that list kind of made me tired, just remembering all that cool stuff that happened to me. Honestly, like my freshman year of high school, it was the first moment that my parents, you know, really went above and beyond the call of duty as parents and started taking me all over the country and just working with me, getting me to the right coaches, getting me in the right situation, and it paid off. And I was throwing over 90 miles an hour as a freshman in high school, and you know, I kind of started excelling there. But I mean, even when I went to college, I didn't really realize that I was going to become a professional because college didn't go very smoothly for me, but you know, in high school was, you know, the best time of my life, and I'm really thankful that I have a really supportive family that, you know, drove me to the end of the earth to get better.
You know, it's interesting because I have to imagine after that standout high school career that there were lots of offers from colleges. Which colleges recruited you heavily, and in the end, what was it about being a Vanderbilt Commodore that appealed to you so much?
Well, I got very lucky. I mean, I got recruited to just about every school in the country. I mean, whether getting a letter in the mail means you're getting recruited, but I was very lucky. I got a lot of letters in the mail. I got talked to by a lot of coaches, but for me and my family, the education that Vanderbilt offered stood out, as well as, you know, the top recruiting class and the quality of baseball players and the quality of people that university puts out. That was the biggest selling point. And I picked them. I never even went on an official visit anywhere else. That was the only school I went and saw, and that just was my choice.
It's interesting because you also had the opportunity to play in one of AJ and my favorite leagues of all, the Cape Cod League, in 2007. We actually, way back when, we had a weekly spot chronicling the life of a player that was in the Cape Cod League who eventually
played last year for the Royals.
Kansas City Royals and Whit Merrifield. What was the Cape Cod experience like for you?
Well, it was actually my first real competitive baseball. My freshman year and my sophomore year of baseball in college were not very competitive. I didn't play very much at all, and I got very lucky that the Cape Cod League actually upheld my invitation. And it was, I remember playing against teams. Like, one team had Buster Posey and Gordon Beckham and Jason Castro all on the same team, and it was, I mean, those guys are, you know, have been all-stars, are all-stars, all, you know, and it's like, they were that good in college, too. So it was the first taste of real competitive baseball and, you know, whether or not I belonged. And for most of the summer, it went really well until the very end. But, you know, it was fun. It was away from parents. It was summer. You know, you got to enjoy the beach, enjoy, you know, life a little bit, and just have some fun.
As we mentioned in the open, you're drafted by the Phillies, and you make your way up the Phillies minor league ladder. You get traded on July 29, 2011, along with Jonathan Singleton, Jared Cozart, and Domingo Santana to the Houston Astros for Hunter Pence. Were you surprised at that point in your career that you were traded?
A little bit. You know, I was never a top prospect. I was never like the other guys that were I was traded with. I was never one of those guys. But about 4 weeks before I got traded, I got put on the DL, the disabled list, and with some just like tired, fatigued arm. And I came back off the disabled list after being a starter, and they put me in the bullpen. And I was throwing as hard as they wanted me to. I was up to 98, and so at that point, I was either hoping, you know, maybe I can get lucky and go to the big leagues with the Phillies, or maybe I can get traded. But never did I ever think I'd get traded, and never did I ever at that point still think I'd make it to the major leagues, which I did a couple years later. But I mean, it's cool. I mean, technically, I'll go down in history getting traded for Hunter Pence, and you know, that was and you know, anything I can do to keep my name around is you know, it makes my parents happy at least.
You know, it's interesting because that move actually pays off as you get called up to the majors for the first time, July 29, 2013. One day later, Camden Yards, Bo Porter calls down to the bullpen in the bottom of the eighth for you to face. This is pretty interesting. This is like a big welcome to the big leagues. Adam Jones, Chris Davis, and Matt Wieters. What do you remember most about that night?
How fast it went. it went really fast. I mean, I remember everything. I remember the locker room. I remember what we ate after the game. I remember my family was there. My wife was there. I remember the leg kick that Adam Jones took when he swung at the first pitch I threw him. I do remember everything. It was surreal. It's why I'm still playing. It's the reason why I want to get back is because of how incredible that experience was. And you know, how well it went the first couple appearances. You know, I felt like I belonged at that time.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Israeli national baseball team player Josh Zeid, as well as a current Major League Baseball free agent. In the 25 release appearances, you stranded 15 of 17 inherited runners that year. You held lefties to a 1.78 batting average. You ended up the 2013 with an 0-1 record, 3.90 ERA, 27 and two-thirds innings pitched. At that point, I have to imagine you're feeling pretty good about yourself, you know, having get your feet wet in the majors, and that might actually not be the best metaphor to use.
Yeah, given what happens next in your career.
No, it was more like getting my feet on like broken glass for right. me. But yeah, no, it was after that year. It was, you know, I felt really good going into the next year, and I was, you know, I felt like I was in a really good place. And
so basically, describe the injury that kind of derailed you for a while, because it's not something that it's not an everyday injury by any means. So could you describe to our audience what exactly happened and what you had to go through and what the rehab was for your injuries?
Yeah, so when baseball players play, we wear cleats, and a lot of position players wear rubber spikes and rubber cleats, and pitchers wear metal cleats. And underneath the big toe in each of my feet, on my right and left foot, there's a metal spike. Everyone has the same thing, but for some reason, I was different. And unfortunately, I was I've always been different, but I'm even more so different in this case. Over the years of pitching, apparently I was cracking the bone in my feet underneath my big toe. So every time that I would push off and every time I would land, I was landing on broken bone. So there'd be shooting pains going through the whole bottom of my foot and up through my calf. And so I remember in 2014, I think I threw 5 games in 7 days, and it was just, I was used a lot, and I was glad. That's the role that I lived for. I lived for that. And, you know, by the time that sequence was over, I was in an exponential amount of pain, and I just had, I couldn't do it anymore, and so we had surgery. I had one foot done surgery, 9 weeks later, I had the other foot done. Had to learn how to walk again pretty much, because both sides of your body are weak, and been battling back ever since. And I was fully healthy this year, but you know, working my way back.
So let's back up for a second. You said that, you know, you'd been pitching with this for some time. At what time did you first really learn what was going here, or did you just say, oh, it's natural, it's okay to pitch with this type of pain?
I think a few years earlier, I started feeling the pain in one foot, and they diagnosed it, and they said, oh, it might get worse. It's not going to get better. It might get worse. But if you can pitch with it, you can pitch with it. You know, in the minor leagues, you're like, oh, I'm deaf. I'm going to pitch it. You don't want to get hurt in the minor leagues. That's the last place, because you can't get to the big leagues if you don't get out of the minor leagues, you know. So but you just grit through it. And they, you know, they work with you. They make sure you get your cortisone shots. You take your medication, anti-inflammatories. But when it comes down to it, you can't take a cortisone shot. You can't take an anti-inflammatory for a broken bone. You know, you just have to, you know, grit through it. And, you know, I mean,
was there any sort of a special shoe that they had you wear, or is nothing could even do with that?
Yeah, I mean, I wore boots. I wore, like, walking boots in between outings, in between, you know, going from my hotel or my house to the field. I wear a walking boot when I put my cleat on. I'd wear extra, like, I'd put, like, a pillowcase in my shoe, so it would be like landing on a pillow, but it still didn't work by that point. You're still landing with a broken foot. So, you know, you make it work, and, you know, like I said, you fast forward a couple of years and, you know, a couple thousand pitches later, and, you know, natural wear and tear is, you know, for that one foot, it's going to get worse. And then the other foot broke, and, you know, you're like, why me? But we all have our purpose, and we all have our, you know, we all have our fate or whatever's going to happen. So,
you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the rehab. You had to learn how to basically walk again and strengthen yourself. Now, we all know that pitching is so dependent upon mechanics, you know, proper, you know, same arm slot with each and every, you know, fastball, same arm slot for your curveball. When you have to relearn basically how to walk, you know, your drive and your push-off changes. How difficult was that, you know, after you finally went through the rehab and you're able to get back on the mound, to try and relearn all that? And obviously, you know, the strength is different, and you might have built up muscles in a different area, you know, from the rehab. How difficult was it to learn to pitch again?
It was hard. I wouldn't say hard. The idea of pitching was easy. It was everything around pitching. It was ever since I had the surgery for that whole year, I couldn't run. I wasn't able to run for the next couple months after the surgery because I was walking and jogging. They wouldn't let me run full speed, and I couldn't lift lower body, and I couldn't do the things that I needed to make sure that I was strong enough to pitch to the level that I was used to pitching. So I was able to get my mechanics to where I wanted them to be, but I was pitching all of 2015 at, like, I would say 75% of the force needed to pitch the way I'm used to pitching. So that was really the hardest part for me, was getting back the strength that I used to pitch with.
Now, you actually got a chance to play for Wally Backman at Vegas this season in late July. I think by then Seth Lugo had already been called up, but Robert Kesselman was down there still. TJ Rivera, Michael Conforto, Brandon Nimmo were still all around. So what was it like, first of all, playing for Wally, also in Vegas as a pitcher?
Beware that Wally's a
personal friend, but that's all right.
Personal friend of Mark.
Right, but that's okay. But and also being a pitcher, there's so much talk about the way the ball jumps off the bats in Vegas and in the PCL across the league. So what was that experience like for you, and what did you see out of those four guys that played key roles for the Mets' drive for the pennant this season?
I don't know which question to start with. I think there was like 17 questions in there. So I'll try to work my way back.
You should be able to departmentalize since you are from Vanderbilt, okay?
Yeah, I think I can do it.
All right.
Playing for Wally in Las Vegas was great. I think Wally, he really knows the game, and the guys really enjoy playing for him. I was only there for about 7 or 8 starts. So, I mean, that's 40 days. So I didn't get the whole experience. But I enjoyed him. I enjoyed the Frank Viola, the pitching coach. He was, you know, really smart guy. You know, Wally played the game the way he would have played it. And I think, you know, most guys, at least guys like me, you know, a little bit older, who have been around, appreciate that. Playing in Las Vegas, it's a challenge. Obviously, the city is what it is. It's a really interesting city. I mean, the surrounding areas outside of Las Vegas are really nice and really quiet. But, you know, the heart of Las Vegas is, you know, the city that I don't even know what the nickname of it is. But it's intense. The field itself, I mean, the wind blows straight out. The field is really hard. But if you make your pitches and the players make the plays, you could pitch well. You know, you can't let the factors of
that you can't control you. You just have to go out there and pitch your game, and you're going to give up a home run. You're going to give up a chop double, but you just got to go out there and pitch your game, and, you know, the scouts will see it, the front office will see it, your teammates will see you do it, and that's all that matters. And the four guys that were in the big leagues at the end of the year that did really well, or the eight guys that were in the big leagues that did really well, I mean, they're all great. The one thing that I noticed, I've been with about five organizations that, you know, the guys in the AAA with the Mets were some of the most down-to-earth guys that I've played with at that level. They had a lot of fun playing. They were really talented, but they were so down-to-earth and so excited for their opportunities in the big leagues. And, you know, those are the kind of guys that are going to have really nice careers. And when they, if they do get sent down, and they're not going to be upset about it. They're not going to be angry. They're going to go down and they're going to be excited for the next opportunity. And that's what you look for in guys in AAA and, you know, making their rookie debuts in the big leagues.
After that,
did I get them all?
You got them all. Dead on, actually. Okay. All right, you played for the Israeli national baseball team in the 2013 World Baseball Classic qualifier under manager Brad Asmus, where you pitched in all three games. You earned a save in Israel's victory over Spain. And for me, the best part of that year was a quote attributed to your mother, which I can honestly say in the 10 years of covering teams, getting liner notes and press notes and press releases after the games for quotes, I have never seen these two words in any post-game notes ever. All right? And the quote was, as we watched the games, we loved the Nachas and Kvelling that was so deep in our hearts. Yeah. I can only imagine how much Shepping Nachas went into this year when you're the winning pitcher after throwing three innings of no-hit ball while giving up a walk and recording three strikeouts in the qualifying game that now puts you in the WBC tournament for the first time with Team Israel. So, you know, it seems like your parents really loved that moment. What was it like for them this year?
Well, they were schwitzing a lot in the stands this year, if that's the thing. They had a smorgasbord at dinner, but... I mean, the fact that I got this opportunity again to play for Team Israel after 2012 when, you know, I wasn't the sole reason we lost that game, but, you know, I felt like I was the reason we lost just because I was a leading pitcher. I was out there when the game-winning run scored. So we were really disappointed. So just being invited back and getting the opportunity to play again this year and being on the mound and getting the victory in very important games in this round, I mean, I know personally, I'm so excited. I can't be any more excited that we get to go to Korea in March. We get to play in a bigger tournament and potentially bring in more players from the big leagues that could make Team Israel very, very competitive in this tournament. And, I mean, I know for my parents couldn't be any more happy. I mean, they brought me up Jewish. I grew up in a conservative household. And, you know, keep telling your son that he could play professional baseball as a 10-year-old in my synagogue was not very smart. Right. You know, a lot of parents.
Well, you know, I mean, how does the son of a dentist, you know, in a Jewish family, you know, deal with, you know, how do the parents react saying when the son says, I want to be a baseball player? Like, sure, yeah, just study and go to law school. You know, at what point did they start really, truly saying, okay, this is what he wants to do, let's support him?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I was 13 years old, when I was 14 years old, and one of my baseball coaches sent me to a showcase for high school seniors, and he's just like, just go have fun. And my parents are like, it's 5 minutes from the house, we can go watch him and just, you know, see how he fits in with other high school kids. And I was a freshman, I hit 92, and I was the fastest pitcher at the showcase, The showcase manager went up to my dad and was like, oh, you know, your son is something special. Or I don't know. He didn't tell me this until 4 years later. But if they were, you know, I think for my parents, I think that was it. You know, they just needed a little confirmation to know that they weren't crazy, to know that, you know, all of the, you know, that I didn't have to just be a dentist or a lawyer. Or, you know, there is a potential. I mean, I was 6'2 as a freshman. So I guess I got very lucky, and I am lucky, but I guess, you know, I got lucky early, and, you know.
Well, it's very interesting because before AJ and I did this show, we coached a travel baseball team, which AJ basically kept the book, and he basically took over the team every time after I got thrown out.
Which was often.
But you know, you need to go back and look through the books, because I have a feeling we might have put Josh, have you ever played out at baseball? I know you played for the Tigers, the Long Island Tigers, right? At one point?
Titans. Whoa. Don't get crazy here. The Long Island Titans. I don't know
Titans.
If anybody's listening.
It was the Titans.
I played Titans, yeah.
Okay, and did you play out at baseball heaven?
A couple times, yeah. Not much, but yeah, we played out at baseball heaven, yeah.
There's a good chance we might have played him, and a former teammate of yours with the Mud Hens might have actually pitched against you. You have to go back and look.
You have the book. I don't.
I don't know if I have the book. All right, so we'd have to look. I don't know if you might have ever faced off against Mike Belfiore out there at Baseball Heaven. We'll have to check that out. His Mike was on our. He was on our team.
Yeah, he was a couple years younger. I think a year younger than I am.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know if we ever played against. I mean, we probably did, and yeah. I got a hit off me. But whatever, it is what it is.
All right.
One question, looking back and the Team Israel experience the first time, and you play for Brad Ausmus, and then taking a look as you go back to your professional baseball career, you have the foot surgery, and you have the second surgery in October of 2014, and then the next month, the Tigers claim you. Was there an Brad Ausmus connection? Is that because of that? Do you think that helped to do it? Did you ever, you know, talk to him about that and find, is that how you ended up being in the Tigers system?
I never actually talked to him about that, but I do know. Well, I don't know. I mean, no one ever knows for certain. But I would bet a little bit and say that there was a little bit of history there. You know, they were trying to catch lightning in a bottle, see if I could fully re-heal and get back to the way I was when I played for him and when I, you know, played in 2013 and, you know, most of 2014 and. You know, they knew the competitor I was. I mean, even when I played for Brad in 2012 in the Team Israel, I was just in AA. And, you know, I told him, I was like, I want to pitch in every single game. You know, I don't care the inning. I don't care how many outs. I don't care how, you know, I just want to be in there. I want to get the most important outs in this ball game. And, you know, we lived and died by it, and he appreciated it. And I certainly appreciated him for it. And, you know, I could be more thankful that the Tigers gave me the opportunity in 2015, but I just wasn't 100%. You know, rehabilitated at that point. So, you know, it is what it is. It happens. It's part of the game.
We have two more questions before we let you go. The first being that, and we have pretty much a series. Every month we've been chronicling, you know, the Team Israel, and we have a player on. And to a man, we talk about this. And obviously you've played on a lot of different teams. And it's different when you're playing for an organization as opposed to when you're playing for a country. Now, you've never been to Israel, have you, AJ?
No, I've not.
All right, and I've never been to Israel, which will change this year. I'm actually going to go. We're both Jewish, so there is for some reason, you know, we feel a tremendous sense of pride in the team's achievement. The two Sundays that the qualifying finals, we were on the air.
Right.
We had it streaming here in the studio and watching it. Knowing that you are playing for a country and people's ethnicity comes into it and they root for a team, does that make it, you know, more difficult, or is that something that's a sense of pride for you? How do you view playing for a nation as opposed to being playing for an organization?
I mean, it's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting question. It's a very interesting way to look at it. You know, just being in the locker room with this team, it was so fun. I mean, it was 30 people with the same background. Very rarely does it happen in any profession, in any life, in any way you look at it. It's, you know, we all had a common goal. We all were so proud of who we are and where we came from and where we come from and, you know, where we're going. And I would say, yes, there is a little bit more pressure playing for, because you're playing for a nation, but you're also playing for, you know, a religion, like you said, or a nationality, or whatever, however you want to define it. But, you know, just being in Brooklyn, if you guys could have been at the game, you would have seen, I mean, it wasn't a sellout. There wasn't 10,000 people there. There might have been 1,000 or 2,000, but the people that we had there were so passionate and cheering and screaming and, you know, living and dying by every moment. And, you know, that's why we're doing it. You know, none of us could play for Team USA. None of us could play for, you know, any other country, but, you know, Team Israel asked, you know, the Israeli Baseball Federation asked us to play for Team Israel, and I don't think one person really questioned their decision. And especially after the tournament, I don't think anyone would have been anywhere else during that week. I think it was life changing for everybody, and we're really looking forward to, you know, what happens next.
When you say what happens next, it's interesting because the rules change, and as you mentioned, you can get a tremendous influx of players, and the roster can look very different at tournament time. It can not only feature the best players from the qualifier, but you can get guys like Jock Peterson, Ryan Braun, Ian Kinsler, Kevin Pillar, Danny Valencia, Scott Feldman, and even Ty Kelly of the New York Mets as well. Is that in some respects bittersweet as guys that you went to war with to make the tournament are obviously going to be casualties of the fact that you can now bring in some major leaguers and some of those roster spots are going to change?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's bittersweet. And in the harsh reality of it, it was a 10-day event. The qualifier was 10 days. You know, you build a lot of great bonds, a lot of friendships. I mean, we've got, right now we have a phone text message like blow up thing with like 40 guys on it, and it's all from the qualifiers, the coaches, it's everything. And anytime anybody has anything to say, they just send a text message out, and anybody can respond. And it's a really great friendship. But when it comes down to it, everybody on the team wants to win the next round. And I think everybody knows what's in the team's best interest. Selfishly, they all want to go to Korea, and selfishly, everybody wants to win. And but if we win the next round, everyone that was part of the qualifier, is rewarded. They helped get the team as far as they did, and I hope that everyone recognizes that. So, obviously we hope that everybody from the major leagues wants to come to Korea with us, but that's not going to happen. We're not going to get all 10 guys, all 12 guys. We're going to get a handful, and we just have to make the handful of guys we get, feel a part of the team and, want to bring the full effort that we all brought,
I have to ask you this. With 2 days to the election and you're saying there's 40 people on this text message, please tell me no Anthony Weiner, no Aberdeen, and no Hillary Clinton are involved in these texts, please.
There is no locker room talk in these texts.
Okay. All right. Lastly, you are a major league free agent. You did pitch in the Mets organization. Any ideas of where you might be headed, where you're leaning, where you'd like to go? And anyone reached out to you yet?
The World Series just ended 3 days ago. So technically, I don't know if it was 3 days ago, but 3 days after the World Series, I became a free agent. So up until that point, I legally was not allowed to talk to anybody, contractually not allowed to talk to anybody. So, obviously my goal is to play in the major leagues once again. So my initial goal is to play with one of the 24 teams that I haven't played yet, whether it's the Mets or, the 24 of the teams that I haven't played with. Also, there's opportunities overseas to play, in the Asian countries, in Japan and Korea. We're not, and you can make a living, you can play there for 10 years and, have a full, really nice career. But like I said, my main goal is to go back to the major leagues, and, you do that by signing with an affiliated team and, just getting back. And that's what I'm working for now. My wife is very supportive, and that's my main option. So haven't heard from a team yet. That's not a surprise. Only a handful of guys have heard anything. So, just can't wait and see. Hopefully my end of the year was good enough where I get a good shot.
Look no further than Rich Hill for inspiration to see what can go on, even non-affiliated ball, right here in Long Island Ducks, and it was a key part of the Dodgers. So it doesn't take much to look for inspiration. Josh, we appreciate your time tonight. More importantly, we appreciate the big win on a Sunday night. AJ and I were watching as the innings kept on piling up, and there were no hits in that game and we really enjoyed that, and we look forward to, Seoul, Korea, and we hope to have you on after, Israel shocks the world and when you sign with a major league club, all right?
Sounds great. Go Team Israel. Thank you for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Josh Zide of the Israeli national team.